morning we're going to be looking at Daniel chapter 6. This is lesson number 7 in your book, which it was Daniel on the lion's den, as we normally call this lesson. But as I was kind of going through it and preparing, I thought, you know, that's what we always call it. But it's, for me, it's kind of a prayer lesson in about Daniel, about his faith and his, and of course about prayer as well involved in this. Or we could even say another example of God's divine intervention with this. But that is sort of the topic we're going to use. In part, perhaps, because that's, those of us who've kind of grown up going to church, that's one of the lessons we probably, probably one of the lessons that first Bible stories we probably learn. I mean, that's one of the earliest ones I can remember. Before we actually get into this, since we are about to be halfway done with the book, this is, after this chapter, we'll kind of break and start going into a lot of visions and different things that are get a little bit more interesting. I want to actually have us kind of go through it, and instead of reviewing the previous lesson like I normally do, let's look at the each of the chapters and just kind of remind us where we're at. Because I like to have, when any book I'm going through, I try to kind of get an idea of what's in each chapter, because it kind of helps me go back, and that's the way I kind of learn where to go look for stuff. So what happens in Daniel chapter 1?
He's taken captive.
Yeah, he's taken captive.
Chosen by the king, a special group, young men to be trained in our culture, but they refused to eat
and speak wine. And what was the result of that?
They turned out
healthier. Yeah, they're way better. And we said Daniel. Who else was with him that we specifically mentioned?
Shadrach, Meshach,
Abednego.
Yeah, what are their Jewish names?
And
Hananiah, Azariah, Mishael, and Hananiah. Which, you know, and it is kind of interesting that we remember one way, one the other. But, and obviously that's in part because of the text, but I always try to remember both of them. Okay, what about chapter 2?
The vision that Nebuchadnezzar saw, that he had, and Daniel interpreted.
And what was the vision he saw?
Is that the statue? Four part?
Yeah. Maybe not specifically even, but just kind of in general, what was this foretelling of?
Kingdoms to come.
Of the kingdoms to come.
And I guess the important thing is that God was going to set up this kingdom.
Right, yes. And after all these things, there would be one that would become the mountain and would withstand forever, unlike all these other ones, it would be a different kind of kingdom. Okay, what about Daniel chapter 3? This is the mid-semester quiz or something, I guess.
The refusal of Hananiah and Mishael and Azariah to bow down, and there was one in the fiery furnace.
They didn't die.
Yep, and they didn't die. Matter of fact, it even says, were they?
They weren't even smell.
Yeah, they weren't even touched by it. Didn't even smell like it, which still is really interesting to me. And of course, what was the important thing for us to get out of that? Well, God rather than men, that we can serve. And of course, what was their answer, by the way, whenever it was proposed to them? Are you sure you don't want to, if you bow down now, go ahead. What was kind of their response?
Their immediate answer was that they didn't even have to think about it. They weren't going to do it. They were going to follow God.
And it wouldn't matter if they were saved, God could save them. If not, it wouldn't matter. Okay, what about chapter 4?
The vision of the dream, or the tree.
Yeah.
Cutting down.
And what was that kind of symbolizing, or the result of that?
It was going to be brought low, the fact that Nebuchadnezzar in his kingdom was set up above every other. Mm-hmm. But then that was going to be brought low.
Right.
Well.
Humbling of
him.
All right. And then what, in Wednesday, what did we look at in chapter 5?
Writing on the wall.
Right. Seeing the hand on the wall. And what was the result of that, or what was it showing?
the fall of Babylon.
Yeah, which happened pretty quickly, didn't it? Yeah. Try to go through this, and like I said, we're going to have a break starting with tonight, and we'll get into something more interesting. But today we're going to look at, as I was saying, Daniel in the lion's den, as we usually call this chapter, or the topic of this chapter, or what happens in this chapter. Will somebody read verses 1 through 9, please, of Daniel chapter 6.
It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 satraps to be over the whole kingdom, and over these three governors, of whom Daniel was one, that the satraps might give account to them, so that the king would suffer no loss. Then this Daniel distinguished himself above the governors and satraps, because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king gave thought to setting him over the whole realm. So the governors and satraps sought to find some charge against Daniel concerning the kingdom, but they could find no charge or fault, because he was faithful, nor was there any error or fault found in him. Then these men said, "We shall not find any charge against this Daniel unless we find it against him concerning the law of his God." So these governors and satraps thronged before the king and said thus to him, "King Darius, live forever. All the governors of the kingdom, the administrators, the satraps, the counselors, and advisors have consulted together to establish a royal statute and to make a firm decree that whoever petitions any god or man for 30 days, except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions. Now, O king, establish the decree and sign the writing so that it cannot be changed according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which does not alter." Therefore, King Darius signed the written decree.
So, what did Darius do? What was he setting up at first?
His government.
What's that?
His government.
Yeah, he's basically setting up his government. Okay, this isn't going to reach quite that far. Yeah, he was, first couple of verses, we see he's setting up this form of government. Why would he need to do that? Or why was he doing this, you think?
As he said, so that the king would not suffer loss.
Right.
He would know what's going on all over the kingdom.
Right. He's setting up his administration. You've got a new government or something. Obviously, you're going to have so that. And that phrase that you meant, that he's suffering a loss, makes me think of something. And something I kind of read, maybe some of the commentators mentioning too. Is there ever a problem with when you're bringing in, in government, do we ever have problems with, say, corruption or problems with, maybe just a little bit, right?
Yeah.
So that phrase, it kind of makes me think of that perhaps he was trying to avoid corruption in the government or something like this, trying not to have loss by that way. But of course, by having that phrase in there. Okay. Yeah, in verse 3, it says that Daniel distinguished himself because of an excellent spirit, and it was to the extent that the king gave to setting him over the whole realm. First time that that Daniel's been showing himself above the others. Yeah. And what a kind of potential problem could that have been for the other people? You've got this one governor who's, you know, who's above these others. That, you think that might strike somebody a little rough?
Jealousy rears its head.
Yeah, it doesn't. Going into verse 4. Obviously, the other ones, the governors and the satraps, are looking for some charge. As you mentioned, jealousy. Perhaps they won their part. Maybe they were being corrupt. I'm kind of just guessing here, but certainly there was this case of, you've got somebody who's who's not even part of the nation. You've got this Jew that's now been placed in a high position and may even be placed in a higher position. So certainly, there's certain that possibility that they were jealous that they were wanted to find some way to bring him down. So, what did Daniel do wrong? What was he at fault for?
They found no fault in them.
Yeah, when even the ones that are seeking to bring you down can't find fault in you, and they were obviously very much looking for something to bring it down. This would kind of be, always risk even mentioning politics, but everybody's always looking for somebody, some fault in somebody else. So how were they going to find fault in him? What were they going to do then if they couldn't find him being rebellious to the king or something like that?
It had to be related to his worship of his God.
Now, what does that say about Daniel when all they could find, when they basically had to set up and look to this one thing,
It was obvious that he was right.
Yeah, it was apparently pretty obvious, and be able to have to go through that. So apparently he was obedient to Darius, to the king, in this respect, otherwise they would have gone to that first. And so they got to somehow figure out a way that makes what he's doing with his obedience to God the wrong thing to do. So obviously, is Daniel unique in persecution for righteousness, whether in this book or otherwise? No. And I think that's one of the reasons why Daniel's such a example. Like so many people we see in the Bible, he's standing up for what's right. And in this respect, what was kind of perhaps a little bit different in this respect than maybe some of the, as we'll get to later, what he specifically ends up sort of getting in trouble for. What's kind of a little bit different like that? That's maybe a read my mind question. I see something different in here about the way they end up catching him.
They actually had to set it up. I mean, other cases, the rules were already in place when the other people were persecuted, or this one they actually had to make the rule in order to arrest Darius. Not Darius, Daniel.
Yeah, and that was kind of what I was thinking of, because, like in the New Testament, there's being sort of a ruckus being caused or something. Here, Daniel, it is kind of interesting the way that they had to kind of go about this. There wasn't a law already in place. They had to manipulate things to make it work.
They basically fed off the ego of the king and said, "You know, signing this decree that no one could do any other god but you."
Because in verse 6, of course, they go to him, King Darius, live forever. All the governors of the kingdom, the administrators and the satraps, the counselors and the advisors, have come together with this. All of us, we've got this great idea. We're going to bring this to you. We're going to feed off of this. And, of course, even though they were, monarchy, they had laws as well. So we're going to bring forward this law. So we're going to bring that forward and got this idea of something. And what was that idea what was that law they're going to bring forth? I just put it on the screen accidentally. But yeah, exactly what I got up there. That's right. No one's going to bow down to any god or man except Darius. It's interesting to me that this was, they actually sort of put a limitations on this. It was 30 days. Which, I suppose, knowing what they knew about Daniel, they knew it probably wouldn't take 30 days, would it? Especially if they were setting this up ahead of time, knew exactly where he lived and what his things were, they had planned this ahead, and apparently they did. So it's interesting, though, to me that they put that in there.
Do you think the reason they had him only for 30 days also is because they didn't want to have to not bow down to their own gods, only but just hold off for only 30 days? They want something, because, when he signed the Korean law, it was not repealable.
Right, yeah.
So it was only for 30 days, and they could do just, they didn't want to have to mess out between their own gods.
Well, very true. And also, perhaps, what if they had messed up? The law gets set there a while, then who knows, maybe they kind of mess up and start bowing down to their god, forgot that law is still in effect or something, Who wants to, take that risk, obviously, it's all conjecture, but it is interesting, though, to me that that's in there. And everyone was for it, right?
Daniel wasn't.
Well, that's what they said.
Well, yeah, they did.
And I basically Daniel wasn't because he wasn't amongst those.
Right. And you can imagine, obviously, with this many people, you know, when they were talking about this administrator, it probably didn't seem that strange, you know, that not everybody was there because you've got a whole lot of people. Are all these people going to show up? Well, we've got this law, everybody's already talked about it, and you've got perhaps some of the, you know, what we call them, like the senior lawmakers, so to speak, you know, coming to you and saying, well, we've already kind of talked about this, and this is, so, you know, he's the king, he can go ahead and put that into place. But there is certainly that little bit of salesmanship on their part, anymore, to kind of sell it to him. And of course, they had to sell it to him for this to work. Let's see. Make sure. Why couldn't the law be undone? You know, because it said, you know, because they say that, that it's like a firm decree. So they cannot be changed in verse 8.
It's just it was a rule of the new version. Law.
Even the king couldn't undo his own.
Yeah, once it was done, it was done.
Yeah, it was basically illegal for the king to change it, which is kind of interesting as I kind of looked into some of the stuff about how the government worked, that even a government this far ancient actually had these kinds of rules in place. Even a person who obviously was had quite immense power even had certain rules to hold him to. As far as sort of the background why that was, read a few things about it. One was that in their culture, that Darius, the king, basically was speaking for the gods in a way. And so, you know, if he was speaking for the gods and they went back, you know, it's like he's, well, the gods changed their mind, it might weaken the view of that. Another thing is that one person was talking about was that if he could constantly go back and forth and change his laws just on a whim, then it might create a certain amount of instability, perhaps lead to rebellion. Somebody doesn't like a law, starts rebelling, and he'll change it back. So perhaps it kind of hardens into law a little bit, makes it a little bit harder to change laws, so it's not just automatically withdrawing on a whim. And so King Darius signed the written decree in verse 9. So we've already seen... shall be thrown into a den of lions. So we know what the punishment is. It's kind of interesting, and obviously that's a lot to read on and for us to really read this, but near as I can find, no one's actually found like an example of what the lion's den were in Babylon or in Medo-Persian Empire. This was something actually from later, and basically what this person was saying, and I'm going to take a real risk here and draw that you can even tell what my box is on the screen, but what he's kind of saying is that there's like this pit, and it's got like a door in it. And this is where that stone would be going. And that this had a big barrier around it, and it was actually an open pit. I always kind of envisioned this more as like a cistern or something where it was like a pit, and you just had a small stone that goes over the top. I'm not sure. Obviously, this wasn't even that empire, but, and it, of course, it doesn't really matter. What we know is there was a den of lions that obviously could be sealed up, as we'll see later.
I didn't get to finish reading.
I'll be more than happy. There's about, somebody has about 10 pages on that on the internet.
I didn't finish
on the commentaries.
That.
But like I said, okay. But then we get into sort of the next part of this. Will somebody read? Let's somebody read verses 10 through 14. We'll kind of break this up a little bit.
Now when Daniel knew that the document was signed, he entered his house. Now in his roof chamber, he had windows open toward Jerusalem. And he continued kneeling on his knees three times a day, praying and giving thanks before his God.
There's something up there to read. You don't, you know, on to read it.
Been doing previously. Then these men came by agreement and found Daniel making petition and supplication before his God. Then they approached and spoke before the king about the king's injunction. Did you not sign an injunction that any man who makes petition to any god or a man besides you, O king, for 30 days is to be cast into the lion's den? The king replied, the statement is true according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which may not be revoked. Then they answered and spoke before the king, Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, O king, or the injunction which you signed.
but keeps making his petition three times a day. Then as soon as the king heard this statement, he was deeply distressed and set his mind on delivering Daniel, and even until sunset, he kept exerting himself to rescue him.
You were saying, let's just go ahead and finish reading through verse 17.
Then these men came by agreement to the king and said to the king, "Recognize, O king, that it is a law of the Medes and Persians that no injunction or statute which the king establishes may be changed." Then the king gave orders, and Daniel was brought in and cast into the lion's den. The king spoke and said to Daniel, "Your God, whom you constantly serve, will himself deliver you." A stone was brought and laid over the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring and with the signet rings of his nobles, so that nothing would be changed in regard to Daniel. 17?
Yeah. So, I think verse 10, you know, there's a lot we can get out of this verse. First of all, right in the very first phrase, did Daniel know this law? Was he aware of it?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
And of course, that's important to this, that he did this knowingly. And went home, went into his upper room, with his windows open towards Jerusalem. He prayed toward Jerusalem. What state was Jerusalem in at this time?
I don't know. It had been destroyed.
Yeah. So why would he pray towards Jerusalem?
Well,
yeah, I mean, it's where the temple had been. That was still, you know, did they have a temple where they were at? Did they have like a, you know, a center of worship? I mean, that was still a place, and so it's, so he was still praying, praying in that direction. And he, it says, he knelt down on his knees three times that day and prayed and gave thanks before God. Okay. He knows that what he's about to do can potentially end his life. He gave thanks. When we're having tough times, how easy is it to give thanks even just when we're having, you know, for the ordinary, maybe not ordinary, but, you know, the tougher times in our lives. And yet, Daniel was about, and it says specifically, he gave thanks. Prayed and he gave thanks before his God. So, that strikes me too a little bit, that he gave thanks. And I think perhaps the one key little thing there, it was, as was his custom since the early days. Was this, does it appear, based on that, that Daniel had changed his manner? Or does this seem like it was something that, like I said, it was custom, like he had a place prepared that he would go to? He went there three times that in a day.
This seems to be his norm.
Yeah, very much was his norm. This is his custom. This was not.
And I think it's when the little friends, well, comrades there, they knew that too.
Yeah, I think
they probably seen him do it.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, if they've been looking ahead already, trying to figure out something, they probably had already. Maybe they've been following him. I don't know.
His pattern, probably.
Yeah, they probably knew his pattern. But it's interesting to me that this was. I think that's very important. If he had changed his pattern, let's say if he changed his pattern, decided that he wasn't going to pray. Or perhaps he wasn't going to pray to Jerusalem, or he wasn't going, or he was going to go somewhere else. What would that have said about his faith, about his belief?
Well, these guys are really set on getting Daniel. In the very first chapter, we read of Daniel purposing in his heart not to defile himself. And throughout all we have seen so far, him and his friends, even willing to stand up to the king, be thrown in the furnace. This is not, this shouldn't surprise us. Daniel, at this time, is a very old man. Look, when the king was setting up his administration, there were 120 satraps, three governors. Daniel was one of them. Daniel has been around the block for some time, so it's like This stuff is not going to shake him.
Yeah, this was just another sort of example in our time where he was standing by. Obviously, if he's gone through all these other things, then it's probably not going to affect him now.
And, you know, how easy it would have been. Let's say the decree was set. Oh, it's just 30 days. Man, for 30 days, I could lie low. I mean, would we do something like that today?
Could he just shut his window?
I was
going to
say.
He still did what he needed to do, and he wouldn't have given them the opportunity to see him do it. I mean, he could have shut the window.
Yeah.
He wanted to be seen, I guess.
What's that?
I guess he wanted to be seen, and he's still going to worship.
Yeah.
Well,
I think
the first century Christians certainly had the hide to keep away from being killed.
Sure. And I think the important thing even goes to that, because we say, well, he's not. Was he making a public demonstration or was he not? I think that's getting away from the thing. In fact, this was the way he did it, and so he just went about it. And so that there was not, you know, him making, you know, what was he making the scene? Was he was doing what he did. It was his custom. It says it was his custom since the early days. He knew it. It didn't affect him. He just kept on doing it. And I think that's the important thing that strikes me. Go ahead.
To me, he had faith in Almighty God, that he was going to obey him. He knew that he would save him. He went on about his regular routine.
Yeah, exactly.
He had the confidence in Almighty God.
Mm-hmm. And like you say, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, he's lived through some very powerful, evil kingdoms.
Yeah, yes.
And this is nothing.
Yeah.
And I mean, like you said, he's been around the block, but if you think of what he has lecturing and those other kings are gone,
mm-hmm.
and they've been trying to demean him and take away his authority since he was 17.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's 8,
mm-hmm.
near about 80. So, he's ready to die.
Mm-hmm.
He needs to, but he's seen God do such incredible things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, certainly Daniel's already gone to a point where he's mm-hmm. been through a lot of things, and up to this point. Going to what kind of walk up was kind of something he was hitting to was, you know, okay, even being a faithful person, you know, you think he might could have still made some excuse, perhaps. I mean, 30 days, maybe I'll just, you know, hide my beliefs or something.
Okay.
You know, we certainly don't see that in his character.
I can see me doing that.
Well, and perhaps there lies the lesson, you know, that, you know, perhaps we would have tried to make the excuse and whatever. About it, you know, it's 30 days, you know, I can hide, I can do whatever, you know, and just, but he chose to do is continue on with it, however that is, as far as public or private or whatever, he just continued on, and of course, he had already chosen other things we might bring out for us. He had a place apparently chosen to pray, right? It was his custom, he had somewhere he went. You know, might say that any change was a compromise. And we already talked about some of the attributes of his prayer. Viewing towards Jerusalem. And so, you know, kind of bring it home a little bit more. Yeah, do we pray like Daniel? Well, I don't think I have to worry about somebody throwing me into the den of lions or, you know, stoning me or anything for it. But as far as, you know, having, you know, a custom to pray in a certain way. I mean, I think that's something we've got to think about for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's a lesson for us to think about is, do we pray in this regard? Obviously, you know, I thought a couple of verses that came by New Testament passages. You know, pray without ceasing 3 times a day, continued on. I don't think he was, you know, even though he had every right, it seems like, you know, was he anxious? Well, he just kept on praying. And of course, he made time. Okay. And of course, now let's kind of continue to move on so we can go through the story this morning, but the lesson. But so they assembled and found Daniel praying and making supplication before God. Big surprise, right? So he was found out. So they go to Darius and they ask him, Have you signed a decree that every man who petitions any god or man within 30 days, excuse a king, shall be cast into a den of lions? He says, yes, this thing is true according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which does not alter. So there, once again, he confirms that it cannot change. Well, they say, Daniel, this one that does not show due regard for you. I think that's interesting. He doesn't show due regard for him. Did Daniel show proper respect to Darius?
Apparently,
otherwise they would have been getting him for that instead of getting him for his belief in God. So they twist it. They're like, oh, well, he's not obeying your law, so he's not obeying you. He doesn't, he's not showing proper respect for you. And of course, we see in So in verse 14, the king was greatly displeased with himself and set his heart on to deliver Daniel. And he labored till the going down of the sun to deliver him. So even though he knew that it all could change, when I read this, I kind of like, it's almost like maybe Darius is reading through their laws, trying to look and see if there was, maybe we might say legal precedent or something for changing this, perhaps. Yeah. Can I make something change? Did I make this in such a way that I can have good reason, to work this out differently? At least from a little bit of historical stuff I read, typically the execution was carried out on that same day, but on the evening of that day where it was actually confirmed, when judgment was or when sentence was person had actually been tried and committed that he had broken the law. So he tries from that point. So they, not to jump ahead, so verse 16. Darius says, your God, whom you serve continually, will deliver you. Do you think Darius truly believed that Daniel would be saved?
It looks like it here.
Why did he put him in there then?
Well, he had to put him in there. By law, he had to put him in there.
Oh, the law.
Yeah, because the law, he had to put him in there.
He did the law, in fact.
Oh, okay. We'll get into this in the next couple of verses, but a little bit more. But he tells him that God will save you, whom you serve continually. And they brought it out. King sealed it with a signet ring. What was significant about it being sealed with the king's signet ring?
Oh, that got broken. You were in trouble.
Yeah, if it got broken, it was.
So they couldn't rescue Daniel without breaking the seal.
And that's why I kind of almost see this more as the cistern thing. Obviously, there's some way that, it could be known that, that this was by the will of the king, that he'd be sealed up in there. Going to the part about whether Darius believed that God would save Daniel. Look at verse 18. Now the king went to his palace and spent the night fasting, and musicians were brought before him. Also his sleep went from him. Then the king arose very early in the morning and went in haste to the den of lions. So Darius didn't have a restful night's sleep, did he?
No.
So then, was he 100% confident, do you think, that Daniel would be saved, that he'd be in there in the morning?
Maybe not, but he was hopeful.
Yeah, he was certainly hopeful. I mean, I think he believed that there was that power, he'd be saved, and he would like to say he was very hopeful. But as we go into verse 20.
It was obvious Darius liked that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and certainly, he wanted him to be saved. And I think what I read in the scripture, I kind of sense that Darius was, he was displeased with himself because he fell for a trap.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't see the cleverness of those dudes to get Daniel in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so that's why he had a loss of sleep and all this, because he knew his decree he put in place put Daniel in harm's way.
Certainly. And if the king hadn't cared about Daniel, or, you know, cared about his life, do you think he would have spent all that time, you know, trying to figure out a way out? I mean, if this was something like, oh, I don't care about him, throw him in there, let's get it over with. I mean, you know, I think there's
some of the other governors, he probably would have put him in that morning.
Yeah. Of course, we'll get there, won't we? So, verse 20, and when he came to the den, he cried out with a lamenting voice to Daniel. The king, with a lamenting voice, I think that's there too, obviously, he's the concern there.
Troubled.
Yeah, he was troubled.
Troubled.
Oh, you know, I hope you're in there, Daniel. I hope you're still alive. You know, the king spoke, saying to Daniel, Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to deliver you from the lions? And what does Daniel say?
O king, live forever.
Make sure I miss something. Yeah. And he says, my God has sent his angel and shut the lion's mouths so that they have not hurt me, because I was found innocent before him. And also, O king, I have done no wrong before you. Now the king was exceedingly glad for him and commanded that they should take Daniel up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no injury whatever was found on him, because he believed in his God. Verse 22, we have another confirmation that he had done no wrong. You know what? Yep. And actually, let me back up for one quick question. Was Daniel in there for only, you know, like a couple hours or something?
No,
yeah, obviously he was in there for the night. Now, Darius may have arose early, but certainly he had to at least wait long enough to make sure that he didn't go out there in the middle of the night himself and save it. Otherwise, that would have created trouble. So obviously, Daniel wasn't there long enough for the lions to have done what they were going to do to the others. But yeah, as was confirmed, you know, I've done no wrong before you, O king. He was found innocent before God, and he was innocent before the king. Of course, we ought to thank God rather than men. Interesting. Didn't Daniel break the law? Didn't he really do break the law though? Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, yes, obey God rather than men, but
Darius.
He did.
Yeah, I mean he broke it, and obviously there was something more important there that we've got to obey God. And I actually didn't find a whole lot on this question myself trying to look it up, but just my own thoughts were, the decree says he's going to be thrown in, but do we think the law had, what did it say about if anybody survived? I think it was probably assumed a foregone conclusion. You get dumped into a den of lions, that's the end of it, and that's probably the end of the decree. So I've kind of wondered, did Darius break the law, or how does this work? You know, well, he broke the law, you know, he got thrown in, he got punished, he survived. I don't think there was an addendum on how that, nobody probably considered that. I think they were, obviously they thought this was a pretty surefire way of getting rid of Daniel.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think they understood that if someone survived that, it was by divine decree.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that was approved.
Yeah.
The same thing was true about throwing them in the fiery furnace. What if they survived? Well, yeah. You can't survive. What if they do? Well,
yeah.
It's obviously by divine intervention.
Yeah.
You can't argue with that.
Right. And it was certainly God intervening in that. As a matter of fact, what did even Darius say? You know, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to deliver you? So obviously it was recognized that. So I think that was kind of a worthwhile aside to consider.
What about the remaining 30 days of that decree? Because obviously this was at the start of the 30 days.
That's actually something I didn't even think about, but...
He already passed the punishment.
He had passed the punishment.
Yeah.
Although,
there's still like maybe 20 to 25 more days of this decree.
Well, if anyone dared to accuse him again,
that perhaps is the other thing. You know, what happened to these guys? What did happen to the conspirators?
Nobody else was going to pursue the rest of that.
Yeah, they got thrown in. So if they were getting thrown in to the point which, obviously, and by the way, obviously these lions are pretty hungry. You know, they didn't even make it to the bottom. So after these guys have gotten thrown in, do you think anybody else is going to try to accuse Daniel of this. No. All may have been in place, but did it really matter?
They saw what happened to his accusers.
What's that?
They saw what happened to his accusers.
Yeah.
So why would anybody accuse him?
You just had some high officials get thrown into a den of lions for accusing Daniel, one of the other governors. I don't think. And do you think word's probably going to spread kind of one way or another about this?
Oh, yeah. Families, too.
Yeah. You know, there's probably a lot of, well, I know there's a lot of laws we have that, you know, don't get, you know, enforced exactly. So, you know, this may have been another one of those cases. Yeah, the law may have been there, but who was going to enforce it?
Yeah.
And as I kind of did with the fiery furnace, let me ask the question, you know, well, you know, Daniel must, you know, those lions must have been recently fed, right? Well, obviously not, because they got a whole bunch more and got attacked before they even got to the bottom. And if, to the point, let me actually read the verse since we have read. And the king gave the command, and they brought those men who had accused Daniel, and they cast them into the den of lions, them, their children, their wives. And the lions overpowered them and broke all their bones in pieces before they ever came to the bottom of the den. I think that's pretty harsh. It says their whole families were thrown in.
Is that because so their family wouldn't be a burden on society? It's just like in India when the husband died, the wife was killed too.
I don't know.
I think they don't want the revenge aspect coming out through the family. And
no.
That may have had something to do with it.
Yeah.
I do know, though, that some of the laws that were in place, I guess some of the more horrific crimes or something did have this punishment to make it go an extra step further. It's not just bad enough we're going to, that you're going to die, your whole family's going to die, adding an extra level of the punishment to it.
Okay. It tells us, you know, even as individuals, when you make certain decisions, the consequences do not just follow you, but it can affect your whole family.
I mean, some of the stories we read earlier on, the wife is the instigator of the decisions, like with Mordecai. Mm-hmm. Haman, the wife, gave Haman the idea. So maybe that could happen with some of these.
Well, that's possible, too, that there was other, something else was behind it as well. Of course, after.
We'll make sure you get everybody
involved. And of course, after this, the king makes this decree. Verse 25. King Darius wrote to all the peoples, nations, languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied to you. I make a decree that in every dominion of my kingdom, men must tremble and fear before the God of Daniel, for he is the living God and steadfast forever. His kingdom is the one which shall not be destroyed, and his dominion shall endure to the end. He delivers and rescues, and he works signs and wonders in heaven and on earth. Who has delivered Daniel from the power of lions? So this Daniel prospered in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian. Obviously, we see with Daniel, in this case, you know, the example, somebody who continued on with praying, with the way they, with his faith, despite what was going on around, despite being in this other nation, despite being, you know, at the risk of getting killed, you know, and having people trying to backstab you at every possible opportunity, perhaps, and yet still prospering and still remaining steadfast despite all this. And I think we get a lot of good lessons out of this. And, you know, we see it, you know, as a kid's story, but obviously for us as adults, there's quite a bit there for us, too. You know, it's a nice little story, but it's kind of a...
Faith-building story.
And the story itself is pretty simple, but when we actually look at all these different aspects of this, you know, being able to, they could have made excuses, and, you know, and the fact they continued on, I think there's a lot of great stuff there. Well, I got a minute to let me say, I appreciate all the comments. I don't know if I've said it before, but I do appreciate all the comments always. We'll be going in. The next lesson, we'll be going into the next chapter, which is where, like I said, we start getting into visions and some things that are quite tough. And I probably, whenever I was preparing before the class started, spent quite a bit of time on some of these visions. And so it'll be very interesting. So come prepared, because it's hard. It's easy to get lost anyway. and all the more so if we don't really buckle down and kind of look at some of these things. And so we'll study that for the next class. Anybody have any other comments they want to make about for this chapter?
You know, Greg's lesson this morning talking about being good stewards. When Daniel goes back up into his window and prays after the decree, a lot of good comments about what's his motivation. I kind of feel like his motivation was, if I do this continually publicly in a way that people can see me, I serve God. And I think that's his motivation. Because, yeah, I don't think there was anything wrong if he would pray for, you know, shut the window. What did Jesus say about prayer? He said, go inside your closet to pray. Don't pray to be seen of men. And I don't think Daniel was praying to be seen, but yet he was being seen. And I think when he continued to do it, he did it only for one reason, and that's to further the interests of God as a witness to him.
Very good comment. Thank you.